next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu.
And we welcome you to the morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and it is certainly great to welcome to the morning show for her first visit of 2021, Nan Calvert from Pike Wynn, and someone who is a monthly visitor to the morning show, and not just with Nan, although that's interesting enough itself, but Nan always recruits very, very interesting guests to join her on her monthly visits to talk about some kind of issue that is related to the well-being of the planet and the environment around us. And she has issued a very nice invitation to a really interesting guest who is going to be joining us today. First, Nan Calvert, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. I'm very happy to be here. And here is to 2021.
Absolutely. Let's make it a good year. So tell us, tell our listeners about the young man you have invited to join us today in this conversation and how you first crossed paths with him.
Well, I've been involved with the Take Back My Meds project, if you will, that concerns Greater Racine since sometime in 2020. And Jason is our new leader of the pack, if you will. He is stepping into John Richards' shoes, who was associated with Clean Wisconsin, and who was recently appointed a judge here in Wisconsin. So I just barely come to interact with Jason, but I've wanted to have something on our broadcast about Take Back Our Meds for quite some time. Because it is an issue that's directly related to water quality in southeastern Wisconsin. And so that is in part, due in great part, to the reason why Jason is joining us today.
Very good. Jason Meekma, who is executive director of a 501c3 agency called Focus on Community, which is Racine's substance abuse prevention agency with all kinds of great programs underway, including this Take Back My Meds program that we'll talk about in just a moment. So Jason Meekman, we welcome you to the morning show.
Yeah, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Glad that we can have you. If our listeners were able to view this interview as we recorded on Zoom, they'd see the idyllic setting of your one-year-old just over your shoulder, reclining and watching something with rapt attention and the pet cat right next to him. So
that's you nailed it. You nailed it.
So, and hopefully he'll remain occupied through the
fingers crossed.
So we'll see about that. Very good. So Jason, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself personally. You are from Racine originally, and what sort of professional path took you to Focus on Community?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm from Racine, and grew up here, went to school here. So obviously, I have a great amount of passion for this community. Actually, interesting tidbit, I'm also an alderman for the city of Racine at this time. So I wear very many, a great deal of hats, which is a blessing and a curse at times. But, you know, it, just through a variety of different work opportunities, it kind of led me to focus on community, which, as you had said, is our substance abuse prevention agency in the city of Racine. And it was really just finding an opportunity to be involved in the community. I wasn't really sure how that was going to look when I was younger and first got involved. I found focus, found I had a passion for the work that they did. Started out as a programmer there, going into the schools and doing a lot of their primary prevention programming. Kind of worked my way up and am now the executive director over there at Focus on Community. And continuing to do the same work, we're actually celebrating our 40th anniversary this year, which is very exciting. And again, through that work, was able to connect with John Richards and the Take Back My Meds Coalition, and am now also the coordinator of the Racine, Take Back My Meds Racine County, which is a part of a larger effort in both Milwaukee and Racine County. So a lot of things going on, and very excited to be a part of all of it and to talk a little bit more about it today.
Wonderful. I visited your agency's website and was really impressed by all that I found there. It lists the mission as to unite our community in an effort to prevent substance abuse and inspire healthy life choices.
That's so it.
A big challenge, and of course, very timely, but yeah. It's intriguing to think about how 40 years ago, somebody thought that an agency like this needed to be formed to do this kind of work. Has yep. this been the focus of Focus on Community through its 40-year history? Not that you've been along for the 40 years, but
right, yeah.
as far as you know?
It absolutely has. You know, and as we're going to talk about a little bit today with the prescription drug efforts, you know, the sad reality is that drug abuse has been a part of our history for centuries. So 40 years ago, the need was just as great as it still is today. It comes in different forms in different decades, which is kind of an interesting history in itself. You know, and prescription drugs over the last couple of decades has really gotten a very strong foothold and become, unfortunately, a crutch for a great number of people, and led to more significant forms of abuse. So, yeah, Focus was obviously high in need back in 1980 when we first started. Unfortunately, we haven't cured substance abuse yet, though we are constantly working towards that goal, but we certainly have made strong gains in really helping young people specifically identify those risky behaviors and avoid the decisions that lead them down the path of things like substance abuse or other risky behaviors. So,
I'd like to take a moment to talk about this moment in time as we continue to be battered by the reality of the COVID-19 pandemic. Yeah. And of course, there's lots of reasons for hope now that maybe the light at the end of the tunnel is really there. And
absolutely.
We're going to see our way back to something that at least resembles the old normal. But in the meantime, we're in the midst of this new normal. And one of the things that we have heard about from time to time is that this has been a scenario in which for a lot of people, the pressures and triggers that often are part of their sad reality of substance abuse are very much at play.
Yeah.
I wonder, in terms of the work that you do with Focus on Community, what you yourself have seen, and what yeah. are we talking about in terms of kind of the high-risk environment in which a lot of people find themselves living and trying to function right now?
Yeah, you know, and that is a great question, and I'll try to paint the picture as best I can. So, you know, Focus is a prevention agency, so we don't do a lot in the recovery environment, though we obviously have our finger on the pulse of that arena very much because they go hand in hand. And, you know, we have been keeping a very close eye on the impact that this pandemic and the subsequent quarantines and lockdowns and different varieties of those that have happened over the last year, the impact that's had on, you know, youth and families and the environments people find themselves in. And the unfortunate reality is that substance abuse in a variety of forms has been on the rise. Alcohol abuse being the most significant of those, obviously. You know, alcohol sales companies have not been hurting. Of the businesses that have been struggling over the past year, alcohol sales is not one of those. They've actually been doing quite well during this pandemic. You can imagine why, you know, being stuck indoors, being struggling through, you know, things I'm sure none of us can even imagine. People are looking for escapes. And unfortunately, as I said before, you know, drugs and alcohol have been a tool to escape for far too long. So we've seen a lot of that during this pandemic. We've seen a lot of, you know, rises in, as I said, alcohol abuse, increases in the prescription drug use during the pandemic. You know, people are finding ways to utilize things or to get access to things because they have nothing else to do. And that, I say that more to highlight the fact that it extends to youth. And when youth are stuck at home and, you know, a lot of times have parents that still may be going to work or are, you know, are involved in many other things, that youth unfortunately get their hands into things that we otherwise would like them not to, which is why this initiative is so important. One other thing to highlight in the importance of this issue, you know, and then I would say the other unfortunate side effect is when substance abuse issues rise, so do other forms of abuse. You know, we've seen, and obviously this is not an arena we work directly in, but we are connected to groups that do, but physical abuse is on the rise. You know, abuse of children is on the rise. You know, we work heavily in Racine Unified and just seeing the efforts that they're taking to try and provide services and resources to youth that are stuck in unimaginable situations has been heartbreaking and heartwarming that they're trying so hard to try to affect and address those challenges and issues. So not to get so far off topic, but it's all so intertwined and interconnected. You know, hopefully, as you said, we're coming to the light at the end of the tunnel with this, and we're able to start to get kids some of the services they need, to get people some of the services they need that otherwise they weren't having as much access to.
What about the effects of this COVID-19 pandemic on the work of your agency, on the work that you do with Focus on Community and various programs that you have, including some of the work that you do in schools, obviously, especially with Racine Unified, which has been, as far as I understand, completely virtual. Yep. I suspect that the impact on what you do or how you do it has been profound.
Yeah, and that's, again, you know, another example of how many things fell apart or fell to the side during this pandemic. And unfortunately for our agency, we do a lot of our programming in the schools during the day, and we were able to integrate right into their virtual platforms pretty handily. So we were able to still connect with youth during the day and provide our skill development and prevention-based programming, which is really excellent and was a great thing that we were able to continue to do. The problem is there's those high-risk periods or times during even just a day where youth are, you know, not connected to another adult outside of their home environment. And those are generally those after-school hours. And we do also do a lot of after-school programming and a lot of evening programming. And that was where we really saw the largest amount of challenge in being able to provide those services. You know, getting youth to even show up to a virtual version of something is hard because they've been on a screen all day as it is, and they're ready to just disconnect. And then later in the evenings, when we launch our family programs, which is usually, you know, 5:30 or later, getting a family to sit down and connect on a screen virtually has proven to be very, very difficult as well, because they have so many other things they're navigating and trying to deal with. The thought of taking a couple of hours to sit on a prevention program, even though they're very interactive and very engaging and very fun in a lot of ways, it's still just not often a priority. So that's had a significant impact. And again, obviously, a service being lost and putting those families and those youth at another disadvantage.
And are the families to which you want to offer this, do they all have the screens we're talking about? I mean, and the access that we're talking about? I mean, I think that's something that we often kind of take for granted, that everybody is fully wired and fully connected in this technological realm in which we all live now.
Yeah, and the fortunate thing is, Racine Unified did a great job in getting out some sort of Google operational device to all of their students. And then when there were families, when we did run into the occasion where families didn't have access, we worked through our resources to be able to connect families, whether it's through, you know, phones and using phone apps, or, you know, helping them to acquire some sort of technology. But that is, again, another challenge, because even having the technology doesn't mean you don't necessarily know how to use it to do the things, to use Zoom or, you know, Google Hangouts or whatever the different platforms they may be using are. So it was a lot of time to navigate that, to teach others how to navigate that, and then hope they continue to show up after all that as well. So a multitude of hurdles to clear to get to quality programming.
For those of you just joining us, today is the first monthly visit of 2021 from Nan Calvert. And Nan has issued an invitation to Jason Meekma, who is Executive Director of Focus on Community, Racine's Substance Abuse Prevention Agency, with a lot of different programs that they offer to families and to young people. And they are also part of a large effort, which is called Take Back My Meds. And that is the program through which Nan Calvert originally connected with Focus on Community and Jason Meekma and prompted this conversation. So first of all, Jason, explain just how big Take Back My Meds is this a part of an effort that's being undertaken throughout the state or throughout the region or throughout the country? Is obviously, we're not talking about a problem unique to Racine in any way.
No, absolutely not. And take back efforts are certainly nationwide. There are versions of this all over the country. There are versions of this all over the state as well. Our version of it is obviously this Take Back My Meds initiative that is really specific to Milwaukee and Racine counties and the efforts within those. But obviously the need is great. And that is evident in the number of people that have joined both coalitions, both in Milwaukee and Racine, and the passion that they're bringing. Nan is a great example, you know, and I'm excited to be working with her on this. But really, it's not just the concept of taking meds back, it's helping people understand the impact those medications have when they're not disposed of properly. And it's not just the fact that young kids might get a hold of them and use them improperly, because obviously that's a significant concern, but there's environmental impacts that this has when they're not disposed of properly as well, which is a part of our education efforts that we're trying to put out there into the community, a part of the marketing that we're trying to do around both of these counties, and really just helping people understand the wide and significant impact this has in multiple arenas.
Nan, can you give us a little more detail in terms of how you first became a part of Take Back My Meds? Sort of what was the mechanism by which you came aboard this effort?
Well, Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network has worked closely in the recent past with Clean Wisconsin on a couple of issues, one of which, and we interviewed, we had a show about it, PAHs that get into our stormwater runoff and are kind of one of those forever chemicals. Once they're in there, they're in there, and they are highly carcinogenic. So Clean Wisconsin has a long history of protecting our fresh water. And so it was logical for Clean Wisconsin to be involved in the Take Back My Meds program. And of course, as Jason said, you know, it sort of initiated in Milwaukee, but Racine County is no different than any other place. There are a lot of pharmaceuticals in play, whether they're prescription meds or over-the-counter meds. And often people aren't quite certain what to do with them if they're not completely used. And so they end up being flushed down the toilet or they go down the drain in some form or another. And unfortunately, water treatment plants can't always filter them out. And so when you think of the number of people in your village or your town or your municipality, and think of the number of people who are taking pharmaceuticals and how many may end up going down the drain into eventually to the water treatment plant, you begin to have an idea of the scope and breadth of the problem. And so, of course, we all want clean drinking water, but we have to do something to protect that. We have to do something to preserve that. And one way is to dispose of pharmaceuticals in the appropriate way. So what is that way? You know, we have to give people options about what to do. And that's what Take Back My Meds is all about.
Fantastic. So Jason Meekma, tell us some of the specifics about how this program is set up and what it facilitates in terms of people being able to properly dispose of medications that they no longer need.
Yeah, and I appreciate the opportunity again to kind of share this info, because as Nan started highlighting, it's so very important that people, A, know why we're doing this, and B, understand the proper ways to dispose of their drugs. Roughly only about one third of any prescription drug goes unused. So that's a pretty significant number when you think about it. And when you hear drug take back numbers, it's in the, you know, the hundreds of thousands of tons oftentimes when we're actually finally getting down to how much has been collected. So that's all stuff that has been sitting around people's houses. And, you know, you think, oh, you have a great big take back day. And you're like, wow, geez, that's great. We got tons and tons of meds off the street. But the reality is only about 10% of unused medication is ever collected in our drug take back events, which is unfortunate, because as Nan was saying, it's ending up somewhere. And unfortunately, that's either in our waterways or in our landfills, both of which have significant environmental impact. So a lot of what we're doing with our initiatives is A, the education piece, and then B, the collection piece. So the first part A is our education efforts and trying to help people understand the importance of disposing of their medications properly, where to do that, how to do that, and how to do it safely. And then we supplement that by providing locations for people to get rid of their medications. And a lot of times that's in the form of med drop boxes, which can be found all over the communities in both Racine and Milwaukee counties. We just installed one at Lakeview Pharmacy and right in downtown Racine. There's several at the police headquarters. Police units in both Racine, Burlington, and Waterford have some. A lot of pharmacies either have drop boxes or will take your unused medications back. And then all of those medications get collected and sent off to Indiana to be incinerated, because that's really the best and safest way to dispose of unused medications. So, you know, we are doing our very best and having some pretty significant gains. There's a lot of information on the website, takebackmymeds.org, which will help people learn and understand the proper ways to dispose of their medications. And again, just helping remind people that flushing it or pitching it is just not the right way to go about this. And by doing so, you're not just helping keep drugs out of the hands of people, you're also helping keep drugs out of our waterways, which, as Nan said, gets us that much closer to having the best, most pure drinking water we can come up with, which I think is pretty important.
I would assume that these drop boxes are very securely built or constructed.
Yep.
Because
I
hadn't even thought to ask that, but when you just talked about how people should not flush these or throw them away, I mean, I think part of what prompts people to do that is simple carelessness and thoughtlessness.
Right.
But
yep.
I think you touched on the fact that somebody might also feel like they are doing, in a sense, a societal service by putting them irretrievably out of the reach of anybody
yeah.
who might take them and misuse them or accidentally ingest them.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to reassure people that
yeah.
when they place these medications in one of these drop boxes, they're achieving the same thing when it comes to keeping these out of the reach of others.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And, you know, and that's why a lot of times you'll find these in some sort of policing unit, whether it is the police headquarters or in one of the community-oriented policing facilities that are pretty prevalent in Racine. Also, why they're a lot of times found at pharmacies, because they do have usually a pretty significant amount of security or some sort of monitoring system. But then the drop boxes themselves are very, very secure. They're professionally made by only a few companies, and they're installed, they're bolted, so they really can't be tampered with. And more often than not, they're inside the building and are accessible during work hours. So there's usually somebody around that's able to keep a close eye on it as well. So, you know, that's important, but also you kind of touched on the concept of safety in the home as well. And something that Focus does is we provide lock boxes for people to keep in their homes. So people can actually lock their medications up, which is a very important thing. And not having, if people aren't able to get a hold of one of those, it's again, just important to find a safe, secure location to keep prescription medications, just so it's out of not even direct access for a youth, but direct eyesight of youth. If they're opening a cabinet to get their toothbrush out, and the first thing they see next to their toothbrush is a bottle of prescription meds, again, it's just that messaging that this is normal and this is okay and this is acceptable. And you know, we say the same thing about alcohol, is instead of that being the first thing you see when you open the fridge, put it at the back of the fridge, so it's not the first thing young people are seeing. It's the same thing with prescription medication. So it's a holistic approach to prescription medication safety. And it's just, again, educating people so they're handling this property from receipt to disposal during the life cycle of a prescription med.
Nan Calvert, maybe you could talk for a moment, and Jason, feel free to chime in if you like. Maybe you could just help us understand a little more what the harm to the environment actually is when we are careless in how we dispose of medications. I mean, without going into too much detail, I suppose, but can you give us some sense of kind of scientifically how it is that medications improperly disposed can do damage or wreak havoc on the environment?
Well, that's such a great question, Greg. So when you think about people who improperly dispose of medications, either down the drain or down the toilet, we have to keep in mind, as I said, that water treatment facilities cannot always remove every last bit of that particular medication. So whatever it is you happen to be taking, whether it's an opioid or it's an oral chemotherapy agent, or it's hormones or antibiotics or whatever it may be, it continues to have those effects when it ends up in our waterways, when it ends up in our drinking water. And so you then begin to build this sort of cumulative effect of all of these different compounds going into our water, which is essentially our drinking water, and interacting with one another. And so when you think about the countless number of chemicals that are in there and interacting with one another, we don't even know necessarily all of the effects that can happen, because not all of it has been studied. So that's an enormous question that I certainly don't feel qualified to answer, but I can only answer in generalities. Just keep in mind about countless chemicals not necessarily being completely filtered out of the water that we use for drinking, cooking, bathing, washing our children, washing our pets. And just kind of think about the cumulative effect that can have on life in general. I'm not encouraging anybody to run out there and buy bottled water, because that has an enormous impact on the environment as well. And most of that bottled water is someone else's tap water from some other state. So you're not really doing yourself that much of a favor anyway. But so Jason, can you speak to that a little bit more specifically?
Yeah, I would love to. And I appreciate you kind of setting the table there, Nan, and I'll fill in some of the gaps. And this is just some of the things that we've seen in the impact that this has on our waterways. You know, and a lot of times you think of waterways and you think of it polluting the water, but there's things that live in the water. So a lot of the repercussions we're seeing is on our fish populations. And, you know, through some studies, we know that there have been antidepressants that are accumulating in our Great Lakes fish. And that is showing that they're having higher levels, elevated levels of antibiotics and estrogen, resulting in lower resistance to infection. This is causing fish to be able to reproduce less. It's what's called feminization, and it's creating a situation where male fish are less able to create the necessary amounts of. And again, here's where I'm not the professional scientist, so I'm trying to come up with these terms on my own. But basically, they can't fertilize the eggs as readily as they normally would under normal conditions, and we're having less fish being reproduced in our lakes, which is obviously a significant impact. And the longer that goes, you know where that leads. So, so that's one thing that we have been seeing as increases in prescription medication is ending up in our lakes. We know that through some studies, about 32 drugs have been identified in Lake Michigan's detected no more than 3 miles away from the outfall. So this is spreading out into the lake. It's not just accumulating right around the cities. It spreads out and starts to affect the entire lake. So those are just a couple things that are significant pieces of this that are impacting our lakes. Our fish are struggling with this, and just again, there is that water quality piece that we don't even know fully the amount of impact it is having on all the things that are we're seeing. So
I just want to interject quickly. When Jason mentioned fishing is an enormous revenue maker for Wisconsin. And when you think about pharmaceuticals ending up in our fresh water, in our rivers, lakes, and streams, and impacting fish reproduction, you have to also think about other things that impact fish reproduction. So this time of the year, a lot of people are putting de-icing chemicals or sidewalk salt or road salt down. And when the snow melts, when the ice melts, or when it's going to rain like it's supposed to rain soon, that's going to wash into the nearest body of water. And as saline levels increase in our fresh water, that has an enormous impact on aquatic life, not only fish, but amphibians as well, and then plant matter, all of those things that make for a healthy body of water. So, our waterways are under assault in a very real way, and we have to do whatever we can to lessen that impact. And certainly Take Back My Meds stands to significantly lessen the impact, the negative impact that we have on our fresh water.
Jason Mikma, how do we measure the scale of the success of this program? I mean, do you have any sense of that, even a rough sense of that, to what extent this message is being received and acted upon, and if these drop boxes are in fact being filled with meds and so on? I mean, is that being tracked? Is that being studied?
Yeah, great question. And fortunately, we live in a day and age where we can track a lot of those things a lot more easily than we used to even 10 years ago. Obviously the take back events, we know because we can measure the weight and of the meds that we take back. And a lot of times it's measured in weight. So, in pounds of drugs that we've taken back. And then obviously, as I said earlier, in the tons, we will be taking tons of drugs off the street during take back day events. The med drop boxes obviously don't take back as much, but every location collects and counts and reports on the amount of drugs that have been deposited into those drop boxes. And, depending on where it is, if it's at a pharmacy, they'll typically have their own reporting system. The city of Racine has its own reporting system from the drop boxes that are associated with the city. So those are some concrete ways. But then obviously through our marketing, if we're doing a lot of that predominantly through Google marketing, which has all sorts of tracking measures, which helps us be able to see the reach and the response rate of the marketing tools that we're putting out there. So, it's a good thing because we are able to see the scope of the work that we're doing and the impact that it's having. Now, you obviously can't be in people's homes and you can't watch them do what they do with their prescription drugs. So, you know, there's still obviously going to be gaps where some of this falls through, but you know, our efforts are constantly evolving and trying to help identify new ways to identify how effective this is being, whether it's through surveys and evaluations and doing some direct community outreach efforts, which we're planning for 2021, just to gauge the level of understanding that people have about this. So we can do any pivots that need to be done to expand our reach and continue to make sure people are doing the right thing.
How long has this program been in effect?
Yeah, so it's pretty new to Racine County. It began in 2020 in Racine County, and in Milwaukee, honestly, I don't know off the top of my head. I'm still fairly new to the coordination of this, so I'm not 100% sure how long it's been in Milwaukee, but it's been there for longer than the Racine one. So the Racine one came out of the Milwaukee one as they saw the need to expand their efforts. So, you know, it's still fairly new as far as this coalition goes, but you know, my other hat with Focus on Community, we've been working on this for years. We were part of the initial team that helped to bring the original drop boxes through a different coalition that we were a part of at that time. And this is just incredible. And I'm so excited to be a part of these efforts as they continue those efforts and expand it to the environmental impact, which we were never really talking about or promoting, but it's obviously such an important piece of all of this. So it's really coming full circle. And we're really excited to be able to start to push this forward and hopefully see some pretty significant gains.
Nan, what's your sense of how long people have been talking about this? Or is this relatively new on even the radar screens of environmentalists?
No, it's not new on the radar screens of environmentalists. And I think, you know, if you would go out into the community and talk to people, I think people have always wondered what to do with their meds when they don't use them all. But there's never really been a coordinated, concerted effort before, like, take back my meds. Sometimes health departments would have a drop box. Sometimes they would organize here and there to collect up unused prescriptions, but not in a very, you know, sort of broad, widespread effort that's happening now. And that's a good thing now because, you know, for a long time, environmentalists have been talking about the impact of pharmaceuticals, and not just pharmaceuticals that come from humans. When you think about pharmaceuticals that cows and other farm animals are given, and, you know, when they're metabolized and then excreted, it ends up in stormwater runoff, and then it ends up in the nearest body of water as well. So we've been talking about this for a while, and we're happy to have, more than happy actually, to have an effort like this happening in this area.
Very good. Jason, you were mentioning that there's a website that has even more information about this. How do people find that?
So it's actually very easy to find. It's takebackmymeds.com. I believe I said org earlier, but it's actually takebackmymeds.com. That covers the efforts in both Milwaukee and Racine counties. It helps you. It has a really incredible map on there that can help you find a take back location. So you can find something close to home. It has really great facts and info about the importance of this, and just really is a great starting point for learning about how to properly dispose of your medication. So I encourage everybody to check it out. It's a great resource.
Before we let you go, Jason, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the specific programs that Focus on Community offers to Greater Racine, and continues to offer even during the restrictions of this COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. So it's so fascinating because all the things that are in this prevention environment go hand in hand, and which is why it's so sensible that, you know, our efforts are aligned with the Take Back My Meds and with what Focus is doing, because it's all about teaching people important skills to be more capable of handling the situations they find themselves in, or, you know, with the Take Back My Meds, in the things they find themselves with. So, you know, the majority of focus programming is about skill development. The days of this is your brain on drugs, or, you know, here's what will happen if you do drugs, are over. Those scare tactics never really worked. They never really were holistic in their approach, and they didn't really teach anybody anything other than drugs are bad, which we even know now isn't always the case. So it's about educating people on how to properly navigate the environments they find themselves in. So a perfect example of that is our life skills program. And we actually go into the schools, as I mentioned earlier, and talk to the kids directly. And we spend about, I'm going to draw a blank. I think it's 12 weeks with them. It's been a while since I've been in the classroom. We spend about 12 weeks with those kids. And every week we teach them a new skill. It's anything from, making friends, to dealing with anxiety, to, conflict resolution. And a lot of times you're thinking, well, how does that, affect substance abuse? And the reality is, it's about developing assets. There are 40 assets. We call them the developmental assets. And the more assets young people have, the more likely they are to avoid risky behavior. And those assets range all the way from, having supportive adults in your life to, knowing how to navigate difficult situations. So we spend time trying to help them develop some of those assets. We obviously can't work with them on all of them, but the more assets we're able to develop in these young people, the less likely they are to engage in risky behavior. And that includes drugs and alcohol. And that's where we see the most significant gains, which is why that extends to family programming as well. As I said, we do a lot of family programming. So it's not just the youth, they have to go home to supportive environments. So we do family programming that helps the parents better understand how to support their children and have the skills available to themselves to be able to coach their young people in their households how to deal with and avoid, again, those risky behaviors. So, whether it's our Families and Schools Together, also known as the FAST program, our Life Skills program, or even our teen leadership programs that we have, it's all the way from kindergarten through high school, helping young people find ways to find success.
In the one-on-one coaching that is part of your Family Assets program, what is typically most important or most central in that coaching? I mean, what needs to be shared? What is that experience typically like?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's different for everybody. So you as you'd said, Advancing Family Assets is another program that we offer. And that's more of a life coach, one-on-one coaching experience, which is absolutely free to anybody who is interested in that. It's just having somebody you can sit down with and they'll help you make a plan around any of the three areas that we focus on are education, income, and health. So sometimes, somebody will come in and their primary goal is to get their GED. So we help them identify resources to get themselves back on track to acquire their GED. Maybe it's helping somebody find a job. Maybe it's helping somebody find medical care that is within their capacity to attain. So it's different for everybody because everybody's at a different point in their life. They have different needs based on their situation. So it's hard to nail it down to one specific thing. It's really person by person. And we started our Advancing Family Assets young adult version because there's a lot of young people that are fresh out of high school that are directionless and needed somebody to help them find a way to go because college isn't for everybody. It's not the end goal for people who are graduating high school anymore. It's only, for the people that really feel that's the step for them. So we're there to help people who are trying to navigate what's next as well. So again, helping people develop skills and find resources to be successful. It's all really about that and making a community-wide effort, which is why the Take Back My Meds is so important because we're helping those people also find resources and navigate a situation. Like Nan said, where most people are wondering, what do I do with this when it's expired or I'm done using it or it doesn't, it's not something I need anymore. It's all about skill development and that's what we're trying to do.
I also wanted to say that one thing I really appreciate about the way your mission statement is phrased to unite our community in an effort to prevent substance abuse and inspire healthy life choices.
Yep.
I really like the way that that's framed, because it means that it's not just about expunging something,
you're right,
preventing something, but it's also about making other things happen that one hopes will sort of crowd that awful stuff just off of the map, I mean,
yeah,
of somebody's life. And I suspect that that's probably some of the most fun work that you and your staff get to do.
And that's why it's fun, especially working with youth, because they're so curious and they're so interested. And, you know, though some of the kids we work with, a lot of the kids we work with are coming from just such wildly different backgrounds and are dealing with wildly different things, we're able to boil it down to some very basic concepts. And that's so exciting and so much fun. And it is, it's in an effort to inspire them to find things in their own lives to be passionate about. And that is such an exciting piece of it all. And, you know, I wish I could take credit for the creation of that, but it was a team effort, but it really was about spreading that message. And it does, it extends even to the people that are in recovery or have substance abuse issues. Just because they're involved in recovery doesn't mean they don't benefit from prevention. Recovery programming is just a different version of prevention programming. Yeah, go ahead, man.
I'm curious to know, Jason, your staff people who participate in helping people, you know, figure out how to get their GED, mm-hmm, or income issues or yeah, whatever it may be. What kind of backgrounds do they come to the table with? Are they social workers? Are they healthcare workers? Or?
No, yeah, great question. And no.
And you have about a minute to answer.
Okay, I'll be quick. No, they're not. You know, a lot of times our coaches, our community members, employees, you can't be a volunteer, unfortunately, for that program. So you do have to be employed with the agency. But we hire people that are just community members that have enough experience with a college degree to be able to sit down with somebody and have a valuable conversation and provide them with resources. You have to have enough wherewithal to be able to identify resources, but don't have to have a social work background. Not that it wouldn't be valuable. You know, and several of our coaches have had social work background, but it's certainly not a requirement. You just have to care about people and care about helping people. That's really the primary qualification to be a part of that.
Very good. Jason Meekma is executive director of Focus on Community, Racine's Substance Abuse Prevention Agency, and one of the facilitators of the Take Back My Meds program for Greater Racine. Jason, it's been great to meet you. I'm so glad that you were part of today's morning show. And Nan Calvert, I appreciate you issuing the invitation. This was a great conversation. And best wishes to you, Jason, with all the good work that your agency is doing.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks, Jason. This was wonderful.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a discussion about habits, how we build our habits, how we break our habits, and particularly in this time close to New Year's, as we're making New Year's resolutions, it can be a time to think about how we can let go of old, destructive, or damaging habits and build new ones. The author of the book, The Habit Trip, will give us some thoughts on that. And by the way, looking ahead to Monday, in honor of Martin Luther King Day, we're going to be replaying a conversation with the author of the book Hidden Figures, which, of course, was made into a major motion picture telling the inspiring story of some of the black female human computers who worked at NASA during the 1950s and 60s. And we will hear briefly from one of the daughters of one of those women whose story is told in Hidden Figures. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived at WGTV.org and available as a podcast. Be sure to look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. Podcasts from this past weekend include a memorable conversation with the best-selling author Jane Hamilton. Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu. We're approaching 9 o'clock.